Comic book stores, sports card shops, the exciting atmospheres of being a geek kid in the 90s. I'm Micah, a 36-year-old girl dad, hubby, and geek. And on the Tavern Geek podcast, my friends and I ramble on about geek culture and NBA basketball while enjoying crafted adult beverages. So, kick back and enjoy us, the Tavern Geeks.
Welcome to another episode of My Drunk Movie Theater. I'm Kyle Sutton.
I'm Trisha Campbell.
And we got to start off. It's Friday the 17th, which means yesterday, September 16th, our girl Trisha here celebrated her birthday. Yay! Happy birthday.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I got to brag on myself a little bit because I found you what I thought was the perfect birthday gift for you. So if you've been listening to the show long enough, you know, Trisha loves two things in this world. Captain America and the Kansas City Royals. Two very disparate things, but, you know, it is what it is.
So, this is the life of the nerd.
This is the life of the nerd. So anyway, so anytime I can. Oh, and rum. Sorry, three things. So usually on her birthday, I either wind up getting her a bottle of rum or something related to one of those two things. Well, this year, she got two out of three because I got a tip off from my brother-in-law while I was visiting him at Starbucks one day, who tells me, hey, by the way, did you know that they've put out the Marvel What If Funko Pops over at our local GameStop? And I'm like, no. Full disclosure, the only Funko Pops I collect are the James Bond ones, which I have all of them, and then anything Kansas City Chiefs related. And I do have the one Kentucky Wildcat because they finally put out a mascot one for him. But anyway, so I don't collect a whole bunch of these. It takes something really to get me going. Trisha, on the other hand, has her set of characters that she goes after.
And I don't want any and all Funkos. I just want Funkos that are my favorite characters.
Yeah, and I think that's the case for most people that collect them. So anyway,
I end up with, you know, three Captain Hooks and two Captain Americas. And, you know, just that there's different versions.
I would say you've got a couple Buckies now, don't you? Winter Soldiers? Or at least one Winter Soldier?
No, I have one Bucky.
Okay. So,
not that I don't want more, but that's the only one I have right now.
Anyway, so talking to my brother-in-law, he goes, yeah, they've got them down there. I'm like, oh, that's cool. You know, and I'm like, I'm not going to go get any of these. And then he goes, yeah, they've got Captain Carter in case, you know, Trisha wants to get it. And I go, in case Trisha wants to get it. It's like, I feel like he was almost working in cahoots with you to get me to go get this for you for your birthday.
No, he saw me in that post that I was putting together, that Captain Carter cosplay. Yes. And then when he brought the family to see Shang-Chi, he was like, were you the one that was doing that? I was like, yeah. And so we started geeking out over the shield.
Yes.
So that's why he thought of me.
Yes. So anyway, so he spotted it and so like tips me off. Hey, yeah, GameStop has it. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll run down there after work and go get it. And that was on a Sunday morning. Sunday evening, I got off work and I said, I'm going home. I'm not going to GameStop. I said, I'll go Monday after work. Well, Monday, I didn't go after work either. So I'm like, okay, Tuesday. I have to do it Tuesday. So I finally roll over there Tuesday after work because I got plenty of time now. So I go in there and I'm like wandering all around. I cannot find any like Funkos. I can find like geeky socks, which I'm like, that's cool. I'll keep that in mind. I can find obviously video games. Can't find a PlayStation 5 anywhere, but hey, whatever. Anyway, so I finally look over by the register area, and that's where they have all the Funkos. And I go, oh, duh. Okay. Walk over there. Sure enough, I find it. It's the only one there, and it is next to the Doctor Strange Supreme one. And I'm going, okay. I'm like, I like Doctor Strange. I don't like Doctor Strange that well, though. So, like, I'm not going to go ahead and get that. Like, I don't even have Iron Man one. So, like I said, it's going to take something to really get me to buy it. So, I have Star Wars ones, except for the, like, a couple that I picked up randomly from
Star Wars ones.
Huh?
I don't have any Star Wars ones. I do have a Star Trek one, but that's just because it was a freebie that was given to the theater and no one else claimed it, so I claimed it.
I do have
it's the Chris Pine Captain Kirk.
If you remember, I know you remember Nerd Blocks. That's where I got my TIE Fighter pilot at. And they also sent me, I want to say, Fry from Futurama and Long Duck Dong from 16 Candles. And I'm going,
I have a bunch of random ones I need to find a way to get rid of, but that's beside the point.
So it's just like, yeah, they're just taking up space. But anyway, so I find Captain Carter. She's the only one there. I go, okay, cool, got it. And then I look down and I see the Kansas City Royals logo. And I go, oh. And I'm thinking it's going to be Salvi or an old Eric Hosmer one or something like that. Moose. If it had been Moose, I definitely would have grabbed it for you for sure. So, but I look down and it's not. It's not any of those guys. Instead, it's your boy, Whit Merrifield, two-hit Whit himself. And they have a bunch of them. And I'm going,
yes.
All right. Her birthday's taken care of. So, anyway, I got so excited, though, about finding those for you that I couldn't wait to give them to you. I'm like, I immediately text you and go, hey, time to go to work today.
You're like,
where are you at currently? I need your location. So I like drop in on you at your apartment just to say, here you go. And you lit up like a kid on Christmas. You were super excited. So I can't say that I failed in any way, shape, or form. So
no, not at all.
So anyway, so like I said, had to toot my own horn, but I thought those were so cool that I was able to find both of those. It was just like meant to be. So anyway, and of course, when I go to New York next week, obviously, you're going to get something from some of the places I'm going to. So we found out last night that Disney on their shop site, you can actually get zombie Captain America and Captain Carter pins. And I said, well, there's a Disney store there in Times Square. If I find it, I'll bring it back to you. but yeah, so you're gonna make out like a bandit this year, it looks like. So she's sitting there smiling, just shit eating grin on her face, guys. So but I am very thankful to all of our fellow podcasters that are out there that when I posted on the Twitter feed, they made sure to wish you a happy birthday and all of that. So
it was nice. Thank you all.
Yeah. So all right. Well, enough of that sentimental bullshit. So we got things going on at the theater and it's frustrating. basically, no real customer problems this week other than the usual people not, coming in without masks and we're getting low again and it is what it is. So yeah, that's neither here nor there. Projectors all seem to be working okay. So, for the most part, except for the one. So we did get 8 back up and running if you listened to our story last week about how I jinxed everything with that. But Trisha, I hear that you may have jinxed yourself with the schedule this week, according to our coworker.
Yes.
would you care to share?
So usually in the pre-COVID times, I would have plenty of staff to choose from on the weekends. And when I got to weekdays, I would struggle because there's only maybe sometimes 2 to 3 people that were available like during the day when school's in session. Here lately, it's been the other way around. It seems like a lot of the high school kids we have are involved in extracurriculars. We have, soccer players and band kids and swimmers and broadcasting. And a lot of them are a very, very limited availability. Sometimes there's some of them that literally aren't available on the weekends and they're my weekday closers. But on the flip side, I have 2, 3, 4, 5 people that I can, 6 that have pretty much wide open availability that I can schedule during the day, during the week. So it's been a really strange time during the schedule. I struggle to get Friday, Saturday covered. And then I got plenty of people during the week. It's weird.
Yeah.
So sat down to do the schedule this week and it went easy and it was weird. And I knew I had a bad feeling the second I even finished it. I was like, that was too easy. And I said that to Megan. I was like, this was easy to do. I don't like it. I don't like it. Sure enough, all this week, I've been getting texts. Oh, I have this going on. at a point Wednesday night, I was like, you know what? My birthday's coming up. I'm off the next 2 days. I don't want to deal with this. So I just started screenshotting texts and sending them to you and Megan because I knew you guys worked on my birthday yesterday. And I was like, I ain't dealing with this. Mm-hmm. You guys deal with it.
Yeah.
The good news is we got someone back that we thought we were losing. So
yes. Unfortunately though, for this
pros and cons.
They are taking off this weekend for family reasons. So yeah. Which leaves us with, we have one person who apparently had a last minute school event pop up, and I'm going, nice to know. Somebody else is sick. Somebody else is out.
Yeah.
COVID. So
yeah.
And we're not naming names. We're not mad at anybody.
No.
We're just frustrated. Because it's the short staffing is not good, not ideal. So yeah. So like this week alone, I'm sitting there going,
luckily these last couple weeks of September shouldn't be too bad, but if this continues into October,
mm-hmm.
could be a rough month because we have a lot of stuff coming out in the month of October.
We do. And we're going to have to start hiring soon just to
get that through. Was brought up the other day at work. So we need to do it ASAP to get them trained.
Yeah. So, because we need to do it over the next couple of weeks before Venom hits and all that. So, that's been our biggest frustration here. And I know when it comes to being short staffed, we're not the only business or industry suffering from this. Like, we have, restaurants all over the country that are having a hard time. Part of it's just not being able to find anybody. Part of it is also not paying enough to make people want to come and work for you. We know that too. Like, it just kind of is what it is. But us being, not being corporate overlords, we have no control over that. So it's just please come work for us. We give you free movies. Occasionally a free
right. popcorn. They are pushing that. That perk, trying to get people to come in.
Yeah
free movies.
We got lots of big movies coming out, you see, for free. So yeah, it's
I had to chuckle. We have one employee who is a retiree,
mm-hmm.
who basically works for us, just keep busy, something to do, bring, enjoys spending time with all of us. And she was telling me the other day that she has several friends who are in the process of retiring, and she keeps trying to talk them into applying.
We'll take them.
And they don't seem to want to. She's like, I'm trying to tell them.
Well,
I don't think they want to hear it from me anymore. Tell them free movies.
Yeah, right. The free movies perk is should be just enough, That
we've had employees in the past that are like, can I just like stay on for a day or two when I get another job, just so I can keep that free movie perk?
True. So yeah, it's one of those things. And like I said, we're not the only ones dealing with it. It's just frustrating as hell. So odds are I'm gonna wind up working in the kitchen tonight. Possibly tomorrow. We'll see what happens. I don't know. So
yeah.
Anyway. You haven't had anything interesting happen to you this week at the theater, have you?
Not that I can think of.
Okay. I know I haven't.
Just the usual minor annoyances.
Typical bullshit. Yep.
There was the, I'm a mother of four boys, do you really need to card me, lady?
I forgot about that bitch. Damn. Thank you for reminding me. Sorry, I'm trying to.
Not that was really us, but we were in the proximity.
I had to deal with her the second go around because remember, she had two problems.
Yeah.
So this woman comes in and you're at the bar eating lunch. Yep. I'm standing there talking to you, kind of whatever. Megan's over at the bar working it. And this woman comes up with her four kids and she wanted to get wine or cocktail, something. I don't know. It doesn't matter. She wanted to get booze. That's the important part. Well, so we have a policy at our theater. Obviously, if you go into any other place, they say, if you look under 40, we're going to card you. Which, this woman still looks under 40, if you ask me. So, she would have gotten carded regardless. But we card everybody. Everybody. Regardless of your age. It doesn't matter if you look like a young punk kid or if you look like an old geezer about, circling the drain. But...
And we have a sign saying this, sitting on the bar right where people stand.
Yep.
Because we ID everybody.
Yeah. there is no disputing. Is Sasha getting into something?
She is messing with stuff on the wall and it fell.
Okay. Anyway.
That'd be fine.
Yeah. So anyway, so she wants to get booze. And of course, Megan cards her and says, hey, you know, need your ID. And she's told people in the past, it's like, it's not a you look young thing. We just have to make sure it's a valid ID, which is partially true. I mean, you know, it is an age thing, but
it's also a company policy thing.
Yeah. It's not our personal choice. Like, I'd just card you if you looked under 40, but, and like I said, you'd still fall under that category, lady, but address. So Megan asks for her ID and this woman cannot find it. And she goes, well, I guess I'm just not getting anything. And so she goes,
I think she went out to the car at one point. She told the boys to sit on the bench and then she left and then she came back.
Yeah.
And that's when she was like, oh, I guess I'm not getting anything.
Yeah. And so she says that and then she follows up with, I just think it's ridiculous that I'm clearly a mother with four boys. And I'm sitting there going, I went to high school with a girl that was knocked up with her third kid by 19. So try again.
Right.
You know, like, you're not, like, congratulations, you had four little crotch goblins.
I don't care how old you look, because, like, that doesn't mean anything. You know, I was having a conversation with someone about, I know I have baby face. I've always looked younger than I am. That's just, it's my life. I accept it. But I was having a conversation. I was telling someone the story about you had come to visit me at school once when I had turned 21 and you hadn't, and you were annoyed because they came to me first, so when I ordered a drink I got carded, so you knew that you would get carded if you ordered something. You're like, man, if I would have gone first they probably wouldn't have carded me.
That's true, because most
I don't remember what frontline I was telling this story to, but they were like, Sutton's younger than you? Yeah, like a year and a half younger than me.
I am.
Oh, so. I didn't know that.
Yes, it's just, unlike you, I've abused my body with drugs and alcohol. So, you know, I
have good genes.
Yeah.
I got lucky. But yeah, I was like, yeah. So that's why I'm always like, you can't just look at a person and be like, yeah, you look old enough. Because there's people that look way older than they are, and there's people that look way younger than they are.
True.
That's why we ID.
Yeah.
Also, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Who doesn't have their ID on them?
Yeah, I have made that argument before. I'm like, that car.
What if you would have, like, lady, what if you would have been pulled over by the cops?
Yeah.
And you didn't have your ID?
Mm-hmm.
You'd be sitting on the side of the road praying someone could come pick you up.
Yeah. Yeah.
With four boys.
Yeah. It's either that or hope they can look you up by your social security number. Like, that's the only other option I can think of. But yeah, no, when I used to work in a convenience store, I used to sit there and I had people that come in and I'd card them for their cigarettes. I'm like, I'm here every day. I'm like, I don't care. Like, I don't, you know how many fucking people just walk through this?
Your convenience is not worth my job.
Exactly. So.
Especially when it comes to alcohol.
Yeah. So anyway, so yeah. So she makes that comment and you and I just kind of look at each other like, really? So, of course, she stomps, you know, she gets water cups for her boys. Well, she stomps over to the our Pepsi machines. And unlike the old fountainheads where, you know, you had like lemonade and then like the little switch on there that you could push to get water out of it. And it usually come out pretty clean. You don't get that option here because everything runs through.
Everything comes through the same nozzle.
So if you don't run the water for like 10 seconds, you're going to get murky looking water. And it's not that it's dirty. It's just syrupy. It's got.
Yeah. Any, even still, most of the staff actually gets, if they get water, they get it from the bar gun.
They do, which is not much better because
it's actually a lot better.
No. I mean, like flavor wise, it's a lot better. Clearness wise, it's better. But like, if you took off that nozzle.
Well, yeah. I just mean it actually runs clear. It tastes like water.
Yeah. Well, we also run a lot more clear liquids on that thing, or clearer liquids through there too. So anyway.
The worst though with the Pepsi machines is if someone gets fruit punch right before you get water.
Yeah.
Oh, that fruit punch stays in that nozzle forever.
Yeah. So yeah, at least the darker colas and whatnot, like the Pepsis and the root beers and whatnot, they tend to flush out pretty quick. So
yeah. Anyway. Yeah, I tend to tell people when I give them water cups, if they specifically want to say they want water, I tend to tell them, you know, hey, that all goes to the same nozzle, be sure to run it for a bit.
Yeah. So anyway, so she goes over and that's exactly what happens. She didn't run it long enough. And of course she tried to claim that she did, even though I was sitting there watching her at the corner of my eye the entire time. And so she comes back over and she goes, this water is just really coming out dirty. And I'm like, yeah, I explained to her what we just explained to you guys, that it does come through the same head. And so like, yeah, you typically have
10 to 15 seconds minimum.
Yeah. And so she goes, well, I did that. And I'm sitting there going, did you though? Cause
I'm pretty sure she said I did that several times.
No, you didn't.
Yep, no, you didn't.
You may have done it short periods for several times, but you need to do it one long one to get it really good. So, anyway, well, they wound up going over to the other machine, which I'm assuming probably didn't have some of that other stuff run through there. So it was a little clearer. So
probably hadn't been used as much yet that day.
Yeah. So I'm just like, whatever. But whatever. She did, like, you, when I told her that and she responded, and I explained to her exactly what's causing it and that it's not actually dirty. It's just syrup lines coming.
Yeah, there's a little syrup.
You would have thought that I kicked her puppy, like just straight up shit in her cereal and ruined her day. And so I'm just like, I don't know what you want me to do, lady. Like, if it continues to come out murky, I'll go ahead and fill it up back here. But we have to get to that point. Like, I'm not just giving you the water back here. You know, you are perfectly capable of holding that switch down for 10 seconds. You know, I know it seems like a long time, but I assure you it's not. It's like the people had somebody get pissed off the other day because their food was taking longer than expected. And she tried to claim it was 20 minutes. So she'd been waiting 20 minutes for her popcorn chicken or whatever. And I go, she's only been standing there for like 8, like 9. And it came out like a couple minutes after that. So, cause it got a late start, but like, yeah, do you want it raw? Like, so I guess the moral of the story,
do you want it raw or do you want it to have been sitting back there for an undetermined period of time under a heat lamp?
Because
those are the options to get it to you right away.
Yeah.
And neither one of those are appealing.
No. So, and odds are, like if it hadn't been for a late start on it, that's probably exactly what would have happened, is she would have sat there. She was on the opposite end anyway. So she was waiting in the wrong spot. So it's like, but yeah, she just kept running her mouth and like, this is fucking ridiculous. I'm sitting there going, ma'am, I understand your frustration. However, you're not going to sit here and curse at my fucking staff like that. So here's your chicken. Fuck off.
I literally point to the food pickup area every time I tell people.
Oh, I do too.
And still people that will wander down to the bar, which is on the opposite end, and sit there. I'm like, this isn't food pickup.
Yeah.
Down at that end, there's a giant sign above the counter that says food pickup. Go down there.
Yep. So, yeah. Anyway, but yeah, that's the annoyances this week. But it's just like I said, with that first woman, it was just one of those, really? Like, you're going to use the I have 4 kids as, and that was the other thing. Like, you pointed this out to me. She's like, you have 4 boys and you're the only adult around. Maybe you should be drinking.
Right.
Like, not to judge anybody else's parenting, because I do, but, you know.
But, like, you're taking your 4 boys to see, which, by the way, all 4 of them, I'm pretty sure were under 10.
Yeah.
The oldest was maybe 9 or 10.
Yeah.
Youngest was probably, like, 4. Like, you're taking these 4 boys, which, by the way, how do we know all 4 of them are yours?
Right.
You could be 20 years old with like a toddler and you're taking like nephews or friends' kids. So that doesn't fly. But you were taking 4 young children to a movie, which this was like, what, 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a weekday, and you need alcohol?
Yeah.
And then you're getting mad when you can't get it? Those are some red flags in my book.
Yeah.
That's how like alcoholics behave.
Yeah. Yeah. Just it was not a good look for her. Anyway. All right. Well, you ready to move on to some movie news?
Yep.
So the big thing that we wanted to talk about that's carrying over from last week is, how's Shang-Chi doing at the box office? So like I said, it opened to a $71 million 3-day weekend, $94 million over the 4-day. So great opening weekend, Labor Day weekend. You know, we can't complain. So the question was, is how is it going to hold over in comparison to Black Widow, you know, or any of these other movies that have gotten a day and date release from Disney? And so let's just get into it, shall we? So, because I like numbers. So over the weekend, we're going to just compare 3-day to 3-day, because if you add that extra 4th day in there, the drop looks a lot worse than what it is. And that's not necessarily the case. It's just, it had that extra holiday day where people were coming in to see it. So let's just kind of set that aside. So, so Shang-Chi's second weekend, made $35.7 million at the box office. Now, that's actually pretty good. That's not a bad second week drop for compared. It's a little over 50%, almost 60%. About 53% drop, which for a major tentpole is actually pretty good. Like, you know, anything more than 55, 60% drop, you kind of start to worry. And that's kind of, that's what we saw with Fast 9 and Black Widow, that both dropped 67%.
And I will say, I've noticed more people leaving mid-credits than last weekend, so which tells me there's rewatchers.
Yes. Or people that, because like I had a couple yesterday that were probably in their mid-late 50s that came and saw it, and they left before the post-credits scene. So that tells me, it could just be that they don't know enough about Marvel. They just thought that this sounded good. So looked good.
Sure.
So, so that's, but like I said, 53% drop compared to the 3-day weekend before is a really good drop. Like, you're probably sitting there listening going, well, it's dropping over 50%. Well, look, let's be honest. Like, okay, Avengers opened to $200 million. The next weekend it made $100 million. That's a 50% drop right there. That's pretty good. Like, yeah. So you have to kind of take that into consideration as well. So, and this is a much smaller, unknown character.
Not everybody comes and sees it multiple times, and there's a lot of people that rush out to see it right away to avoid spoilers, especially with an existing franchise like Marvel franchise.
Yes.
So they'll rush out to see it right away, and then they're good.
Exactly. So according to Deadline, this 35.7 million. That is the third biggest second weekend for a September release following It and It Chapter 2, which had 60.1 million and 39.6 million respectively. So it's in line there. I mean, obviously a far cry from that first, you know, It Part 1 or Chapter 1, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, the drop was good enough that second weekend was good enough that Disney has made a major announcement, and we're actually very happy about it. The rest of their 2021 releases will be theatrical exclusive. So that means Eternals, Encanto, and what was the Kingsman, the Kingsman prequel. So those are three big ones. There were a couple others in there. Let me.
Isn't Last Duel owned?
Last Duel
by them as well.
And that's coming in October.
It's 20th Century Studios, but yes.
Well, so is Kingsman. So
yeah.
Ron's Gone Wrong, that's another one. Steven Spielberg's version of West Side Story. They're all getting theatrical exclusive releases, and that is huge.
If I remember it, Encanto is getting a slightly shorter window. I think it's getting 30 days and everything else is getting 45.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to get to next. So with that, obviously the 45-day window is kind of what we're looking at. And honestly, I think that's more than enough time.
A pre-COVID standard was 90, but 45 seems to be kind of the new standard these days, which is fine.
I was going to say, about 15, 20 years ago, it used to be about 110, 120-day window. Yeah. So like the windows are getting shorter. We're reaching that point where, okay, we're not going to have it as long. But on the flip side of that, by the time that most of these movies leave, more new content is coming. And so it helps.
There's hardly anybody going to see some of these by the end of those windows anyway. So we're not missing out on much.
Exactly. And with some of these, I don't expect a whole lot of repeat watch or the Last Duel.
Few of them reach the end of that theatrical window. Like, I could think of like Frozen. We still had Frozen when it hit. Shells on DVD. That's rare. Extremely rare.
So this is the official statement from Kareem Daniel, who's the chairman of Disney Media and Entertainment Distribution. Following the tremendous box office success of our summer films, which included 5 of the top 8 domestic releases of the year, we are excited to update our theatrical plans for the remainder of 2021. As confidence in movie going continues to improve, we look forward to entertaining audiences in theaters while maintaining the flexibility to give our Disney Plus subscribers the gift of Encanto this holiday season. So Encanto's dropping, I want to say Thanksgiving weekend, November 24th. That sound right? Sure. I think that's what I saw in the poster. It will then, so 30 days later will be Christmas Eve. So it's going to drop on Disney Plus on Christmas Eve, which is great for families that aren't ready to get out of the house, or, you know, if you got smaller kids that you can turn that on after they've opened presents and plop them down while you're fixing dinner. Like, honestly, I think that was the best case scenario for that movie, because it's another kind of like Raya and the Last Dragon, which should have been a theatrical exclusive as well, at least with a 30-day window, just to help us out. Mm-hmm. That allows those families to get to see it in time for the holiday season. So,
and it's another kind of culturally important movie.
Exactly.
That needs to be shared.
Yes. So, because I think that movie is set in Latin America, Central America.
Yes. I wouldn't know without looking it up, but yes.
It's definitely Latin America. Just I can't remember what specific country it is, but Colombia is what we're looking at. But even still, it's one of those that a lot of the Latin community is going to want to see. So that's what's going to happen with that. Everything else is getting a 45-day window, which is, you know,
Colombia, by the way.
Okay, thank you.
Colombia.
So so that was the huge announcement that was made after this past weekend. It was made before this past weekend. It was made as soon as we got done recording last week's episode, and I just went, God damn it. Why? Every time. It doesn't matter. So, but that's the good news. Now, if you're one of those that's sitting there going, well, that's great for you guys, but I'm still not ready to go back to a crowded theater or anything like that. I wish I could give credit to whoever it was that I saw on Twitter that posted it. I know Movies After Work shared it. I can't remember. But the basic idea is, you know, you want to support the movie theaters. You want to see these new movies on the big screen like they're supposed to be intended. I can tell you from our personal experience, weekday screenings, if you can make them, even weeknight screenings, like after you get off work, they're not busy. It's the school year, not everyone out.
If it's a crowd thing, maybe wait till it's been out a week.
Yeah.
Even on weekdays, like the new releases are what generally sells. If it's popular, it's going to sell decently. It's not going to be crowded.
Yeah.
But if you're truly wanting to be away from people, go to a weekday release. You can also talk to us. I know I helped a lady the other day. She ended up in broken seats. And so we were figuring out where to move her. And I pointed out, she was trying to decide between two sets of seats. And I said, if you choose this particular set, there's people next to you. But if you look at this other set that are slightly down the row, you're actually next to a broken seat. Mm-hmm. So there won't be people. And she goes, oh yeah, let's go with that. Cause we were kind of iffy about being around people anyway. We'll help you with that. If there's any broken seats, or if you're worried about people, we can try to help you out. We can't guarantee that you're going to be away from people. Like we are operating at 100% capacity. So I cannot guarantee you, short of buying an extra ticket to ensure it will be empty.
Right.
I can't promise anything, but I can help you out if you know, because we got broken seats right now. I can put you next to a broken seat to try to reduce their odds. Mm-hmm. You know, we could put you on the end of a row. We can kind of help you out if you just talk to us.
Yeah. And a lot of theaters, I know our chain specifically, they tend to have about 6 feet between where the back of your head or where your head would be and the next row in front of you down below. So you are maintaining social distance with the people in front of you, people behind you are distance. It's just a matter of side to side.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and as long as you're all facing forward, I mean, you're not going to be coughing right on each other. So ideally, but if you want that extra gap, those are the ways to go about it. Either like September in the week, or, you know, after it's slowed down,
and if you get in your seat and someone sits down next to you, come out and tell us, hey, I'd rather not be by people. Can I move my seat to another spot that maybe there's less people? And we'll do that. We can do that.
Absolutely.
But you gotta hold on to your ticket stubs.
Yes, that's a big one. You gotta hang on to those tickets.
Stop throwing them away. We give them to you for a reason.
Yep. So, that was great news coming from them, especially in the wake of Universal making the decision to go ahead and go day and date with Halloween Kills. I don't know. Just kind of bizarre.
And I was talking about this actually, ironically, with my brother who does listen. Because he was like, so I know what you're talking about tomorrow. But I was having this conversation that I was like, you know, other studios tend to follow Disney, so this is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
So with Disney making this announcement, that's a good indication of where most studios are headed.
Yeah.
I think day and date releases are going to be left in 2021.
Yeah. Yeah. Warner Brothers is committed to it through the rest of the year, but they'd already made the announcement that 2020 they'll be doing at the very least a 45-day window. And I think 45 days is going to be the standard. And that's fine. It's Warner Brothers is only hurting themselves at this point. They're not releasing subscriber numbers, which a lot of them aren't going to. I question how well that's going for them, especially today, because I found this piece of news out. Apparently, so we have Amazon Prime. So, and with us, Crystal is actually paying for Paramount Plus through that. So we have a it's a channel within the app. So, which I don't like. I actually like to keep everything separate so I can just go find it. And I don't think the Amazon Prime user.
Yeah, I agree. I had Stars through Amazon Prime at one point, and I didn't like it, which ironically now I have it through Hulu instead, but hey, whatever.
But I think Hulu has a better, more user-friendly interface. So, so I can't dispute that. But Amazon made the announcement today. Basically, HBO Max and HBO in general will no longer be available on Amazon Prime as a like premium subscription option, like
a separate channel.
Yes. So because of that, what HBO Max is doing is, and I thought this was funny, they charge $14.99 a month for their top tier. You know, you get everything, including the day and date releases. That's what I have because it's basically the only option initially. And they're, you know, I don't really like commercials, so it's worth it at that point. But they made the announcement today that if you had an HBO Max subscription through Amazon, you can now go over to HBO Max through their actual app and website, and you can actually get a 6-month discount. Of 50% for that time period to make up for it. So that's $7.49 a month, but but they've started running an enticing deal where you can pay half price for the ad-free subscriptions here, and that rate, which is even lower than the ad-sponsored plan, will be good for up to 6 months, after which you'll be switched back to the standard $14.99. And that deal is available through September 26th. We're not advertising for HBO. I'm just letting you all know that if you had it through Amazon, I want you to stick it to the man and get your 50% off for the next 6 months. So that's what's going on. So as of September 15th, you can no longer subscribe to HBO through Amazon. So that's what they're trying to do. So I feel like that loss of a space is where they're having to do this to make up for it. And you gotta do what you gotta do. But that, like I said, I don't see how any way that streaming service can be profitable with putting that much money into the content you're putting onto it. Netflix is still, from what I understand, is still operating at a loss and in a lot of debt to make that happen. However, they have a subscriber base that's wide enough to make it work and offset that. Not to mention when it comes to their television.
Almost feels rare these days to run into someone who doesn't subscribe to Netflix.
Yeah.
Like any other streaming service, it's kind of hit or miss with people, but it seems like Netflix is almost the default for most people still.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then you run into the ones that are like, I'm tired of them always hiking the prices and there's not enough on there, so I canceled it. But like you still had it at some point.
Yeah. I was going to say, and then you have folks like us, I say us, you used to, until you split your plan with T-Mobile, dumb, but dumb. Basically, if you have T-Mobile, you get Netflix included for free. If you had Sprint, you got Hulu included for free. Yeah. So if you have AT&T, you get HBO Max for free if you have the certain tier.
T-Mobile may not pay for my Netflix since I only have a single line. But I did get Apple TV Plus free for a year. So
yes, which is really funny because you don't own any Apple products. So.
Well, I have an old iPod sometimes, but I haven't used it in years. That barely counts.
Yeah. But yeah, so I see that and I go, okay, so you're losing spots for where like you didn't get that deal done to make it profitable for both you and Amazon to be able to offer that. So you're going to lose subscribers because of that. Now you have to take a cut to get those subscribers back or try to retain as many of them as you can. And I'm going, yeah. And the day and date thing is, like I said, you're putting that much money.
I think they're hoping that people will subscribe for day and date and then stay.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's going to be the case.
No.
Because I know lots of people who kind of almost play streaming service roulette.
Yep.
They kind of will pick and choose what they want, and they'll be like, "Oh, I kind of watched everything I wanted to, so I canceled it."
Yeah.
I might bring it back if there's something I want to watch, but like, no one has everything.
No.
They kind of pick and choose and will kind of rotate through what they have, what they currently have, what they get rid of, what they bring back.
Or they do what some of us do and just
pass. Plus, you know, password sharing.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I
will admit I do it. I know you do it.
You know I do it. So how do you think I got my free year of Apple TV Plus so that way we can watch Ted Lasso and literally nothing else? So, but yeah, so I found that development interesting. And like I said, just with the amount of money that they have dumped into the films that they have now put on there, the Suicide Squad alone was $180 million budget. They did not make that back at the box office, like, because figure in at least 50%, if not 100% market share or marketing budget to make that work. And yeah, it didn't even clear 100 million at the US box
office. I mean, that's what we've been saying. The streaming releases they don't make as much money. They don't make them money like theatrical releases do. And so it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
So they're either going to like we kind of, it's kind of going as we predicted, that this is going to be a temporary, this situation kind of thing. And then it's going to go back to theatrical releases because they realize they don't make money. Or if they do stick with streaming releases, the budget's going to go down.
Yeah.
Now there's directors out there that can make fantastic movies on small budgets.
Mm-hmm.
That's not always the case. And not every movie can be made on a small budget. Can you imagine a Marvel movie on a small budget?
A Daredevil one I could see working. If you gave it at least a $30, $40 million budget, made it rated R and really went for it.
But like I was talking about, they're going to be like, think of, you know, the Netflix originals you used to see. Not that they're bad, but you can tell they're not the same quality as what you see in a theater because it's a smaller budget because they know they're not going to make their money back.
Yep.
And a lot of these movies, I'm pretty sure a big chunk of their budget is, you know, a single big name to try to bring people in.
Yeah.
Or a couple big names to try to bring people in. And I mean, like I said, some of those are really good, but not all of them.
Yeah. So, all right. So yeah, moving on from that, let's go ahead and now, where do I want to go with this next? I know. I just found this out today. And so, as a James Bond fan, I have to share it. So, the movie premieres overseas in the UK on September 28th. It will open here on October 8th nationwide. However, if you're like me, which I'm going to screen it early anyway, we've already had this conversation, but
Perfect for the job.
If you want to see this movie a couple days early, they have just announced that at AMC, I don't know if it's AMC, but IMAX for sure, any IMAX theater or most IMAX theaters will be showing the early access screening starting Wednesday, October 6th. Now, this is the same kind of release strategy that Warner Brothers implemented with Tenet last summer. And it worked out okay. Not great, but it worked out okay enough. That was for like a week long early access though. This is just a couple days. So it will be available in IMAX, where they actually do have about 40 minutes of film footage, which is roughly a third of the film or so. It's almost a 3-hour movie and I can't wait. I know people are bitching about the runtime and I'm like, don't care. It could be 3 hours of him just sitting around eating breakfast. I'm watching it. So they actually shot 40 minutes of footage for IMAX on IMAX cameras for the IMAX screen. So I will probably go see this movie in several different formats before its run is over. But that's not the only thing. Obviously, we're going to have it in MX4D, which means other companies are going to have it in their 4D motion theaters. They've also announced, so 4DX is the other one. So not to be confused with MX4D, that's just the company that we use. You'll also have the Dolby D-Box motion theaters. So that's another one, depending on where you're at. I want to say those are with like Cinemark or Regal. I can't remember which. But if you want to enjoy the action of a Bond movie and feel like you're in the action of a Bond movie, you have that as an option. You want to feel like you're actually, you know, like having the movie pop out at you, Trisha, this movie's actually getting a 3D release. That's what I said. Yeah, she's making a face like, what? Yeah, it's getting a 3D
release. Honestly, I don't remember the last 3D movie we had.
I
don't. And this even goes back way before the pandemic. It's just, they don't sell well anymore, so we just kind of stopped showing them.
Yeah. So, yeah, it will be shown in 3D and Real D, making it the first film in the franchise's 59-year history to be released in that format. So, it looks to me like they are going all out. And then there's one other format, and this is one that we do have, Trisha. Well, we don't have it, but our company does. ScreenX. Screenplay. It's gonna be on the kids theater. You know.
That's the only format we got left.
No. So ScreenX. So if you're not familiar with ScreenX, it's a 270 degree view. So they actually have screens on the walls of the theater or partial.
Yeah. The walls on the sides of the theater are set up to. They're not straight up screens.
Right.
Like you see at the front of the theater, but they are designed to work as a screen.
Yes. And so basically that gives you kind of a peripheral view. It's not a full 360, but like you can see off to the side. And so it's supposed to be a much more immersive experience. I still haven't seen anything in this format.
I haven't seen a full movie in it. Like you said, our company does have ScreenX theaters and they showed us a clip. I don't remember what movie it was. A clip of something at a manager's meeting that I think it was some sort of car chase, so you could like see the sides of the car and whatnot. I think it was Black Panther, now that I think about it.
Okay.
That car chase was at towards the beginning of Black Panther. I think that scene we saw on ScreenX. Like it was cool, but
yeah,
nothing I'd get excited over. Nothing I'd pay extra for personally.
But if
that's my opinion.
Right. But if you want to experience that on a Bond movie, that is an option. I don't think I've seen
it. I think it's worth checking out once.
Yeah.
At least. See what you think.
Yeah. And like I haven't seen the movie in ScreenX. So this will probably be the one that gets me out to one of our other locations to go check it out. And that's what I was really getting at. I've heard people aren't really impressed with it, or depending on the movie.
Yeah. And from what I understand, it's not the whole movie.
Yeah.
It's certain scenes. So it'll turn on and off throughout the movie.
Kind of like IMAX, so in that aspect. So, you know, but yeah, so it looks like they are going all out to give this movie the opportunity to make as much money as possible with multiple different premium formats, the early access screenings, all of that. And of course, like I said, it is opening in the UK next week, or the 28th, so a week after next. So I think that's a great sign that they, obviously the Broccoli Wilson partnership at Eon Productions is committed to the theatrical experience with Bond, as is MGM and Amazon at this point. But yeah, to have that kind of, like I said, we don't see movies get released in all these different formats like this. We just don't. It rarely happens.
Not like, this is like everything.
Yeah.
You usually don't see that. You usually see it in a couple.
Yeah. And for it to be announced like in an actual like press release to say all that is kind of a big deal. That tells me that they want you to go see this multiple times, one, and two, in as many different ways as possible. I'm not gonna lie, if we were to get this in 3D, I'd probably shit a brick. I'd be like, I'll go watch James Bond in 3D, why not? Like, you know, like I said, I was already planning on watching it a minimum of like three times, because that's just kind of my standard when it comes to Bond movies anyway. but it was going to be once, probably with you when we screen it, once with Crystal. And so those would probably be, both be on our grand screen or large format. And then I was probably definitely going to watch it by myself in MX4D. But now that I know it's going to ScreenX and of course the IMAX thing, I may go to a rival theater just to see it in IMAX one, because I saw Skyfall and Spectre that way. And so I need to complete that set, this little trilogy of things. And then the ScreenX, just because I haven't seen anything in ScreenX yet. So I'm like, why not? This is the one to do it on, right? So
that's fair.
Yeah. So, but I just wanted to share that because I found that really interesting that they're going that route, like giving it such a wide berth to work with. So, and it's Bond.
Giving it every opportunity to succeed.
Yeah. So,
we'll be right back.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing today? My name is Michael Rocco.
My name is Raf Stitt.
And who are we, Raf?
We are the host of Straight to DVD.
We are a film review Joker memeing podcast. That's who we are.
Hell yeah, that's what we do.
This is who we are. This is what we do. Come listen to us. You can find us on Instagram at Straight to DVD Pod. That's the number 2. You can also find us on Apple Music and Spotify. Where else can they find us, Raf?
They can find us wherever they find podcasts, wherever you listen, whether it's, like you said, Apple, Spotify, maybe Google Play.
Twitter?
They can find us on Twitter. Same handle at Straight to DVD Pod. Fantastic. You can follow the two of us on Instagram. Michael, what's your handle?
At @Michael_Rocco_
At Raf Stitt, all one word. We hope you come join us for some movie chatter, some banter, hopefully some laughs.
Hopefully.
Yeah. That's about it.
That's it. There's nothing else for us to tell you.
That's all we've got. So we hope to see y'all soon.
Check us out. Goodbye.
So we got to talk about some directors real quick, and I think that's going to close our show out for the day. So so I got 3 I want to talk about in various degrees of yay to nay. So we'll start with Chloe Zhao, who has basically said that The Eternals will have a very big effect on the MCU. She goes, I think we stand alone as a film for sure, but I do think we will have a very big effect on the future of the MCU with what happens in this film, which, you know, as a fan is really satisfying for me. I geek out. Of course, she didn't get into any specifics on it. Trisha, what would you take away from that? Do you think that this could have some kind of lead into the multiverse situation as we're about to experience it, or they're just going to be the new big badasses of the Marvel Universe?
I'm convinced everything is leading into the multiverse until proven otherwise.
Yeah.
Like, that's all we know about the next phase, so.
Yeah.
I'm just going to believe everything. I think it has to do with that.
Yeah. I think that's a fair argument at this point. Like, I'm the same way.
Because if they're told not to interfere, except, you know, certain circumstances, how could they ignore multiverse problems? Yeah. Like, that's got to be big enough that they're like, all right.
Yeah.
It's time for us to step in. And I just want to see all the other heroes just be like, where the fuck were you?
Yeah.
I want to see that fight.
Right.
Well, we couldn't, and I don't care what you were told. You let half the universe disappear for 5 years, and y'all just said, not my problem?
Yeah. Yeah, so, when I read that, I'm like, okay, she's excited, obviously. She's going to pimp the film however she has to. And it sounds like she is a fan. So, of course, Marvel's going to have her on a short leash so that she can't say anything. But I think you're right. I think at one point, before Phase 4 even got really going, because we were still kind of dealing with the lead up to Infinity War and Endgame, I think at one point Marvel had said that Phase 4 was going to start dealing more with the cosmic portion of the MCU, which would include Guardians of the Galaxy, Captain Marvel, The Eternals, all that. And so I wonder if we're going to be seeing some of that as well, or if it's just going to all multiverse the fuck out of itself and we just have to go, oh God, what way is this movie going this time? Like, is Thor and Love and Thunder going to be multiverse, or are we going just straight up cosmic here? Like, we don't know. Yeah. And so that's kind of played in the back of my mind while we've all been going, oh, multiverse, multiverse, multiverse. Like, just say it until the word just loses all meaning. And I'm going, okay, but what about this, guys? Like, did we all, like, I know we're Marvel fans and we have a short attention span, and all we can focus on is whether or not Mephisto is going to be the big bad at some point in this series or what. But I'm sitting there going, over here, we have this cosmic situation that has been discussed, but not really fully addressed yet. Is that coming soon, or are we just gonna land farther into the multiverse until we get that situated? Like, I don't know. So
I doesn't want to know what's coming. I don't want to try to figure out what's coming, so I'm just gonna stick with the things we have confirmed, so that I'm less likely to hear some sort of theory that turns out to be true and then I'm disappointed because I know what's happening.
Yeah,
so that's just my take. I know multiverse is happening.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to assume everything is multiverse so I can be surprised when something is not.
Okay. I think that's fair. So I'm not one of those. I like to speculate and just for shits and giggles and just see if I'm right or not. More often than not, when it comes to the Marvel universe, I don't get disappointed when I'm wrong, because it's like, fuck, it's either way better than what I had planned, or I'm like, okay, they did that in a way that I'm not upset about it. Like,
yeah.
You know, like the end.
Yeah, I've never been disappointed after a Marvel movie.
No. Like the end of Loki, I'm going, well, that didn't go where I expected it to, but it went exactly where I expected it to. And that was kind of awesome for a show that I was not at all excited about. So, so we'll see. But like I said, the director's enthusiasm on that. Since we're talking about multiverse, I do have to point this out. So we have to go Marvel adjacent for a second. Venom 2 is coming out on October 1st. They have already started early screenings for it, you know, pre-shows, and they're not test screenings anymore because the movie's got to be locked at this point. It's just, it's too late in the game. However, Marvel or Sony has ramped up their marketing for the film and is using a lot of tweets and whatnot coming from people who watched the movie in those screenings. Now, those folks are not allowed to say what they saw or anything like that, but they are allowed to say whether or not they liked it, didn't like it, or whatnot. And so Sony is already like contacting people to say, hey, can we use your quote for our advertising campaign? Which is, one, really weird, and two, not always a good sign to me for the quality of a movie.
Because usually you get quotes from the press and critics for that.
Right, and even then I get leery, because you have to really look and see who those critics are. Because you might see, you know, 20 years ago, 10, 20 years ago, you might have seen Roger Ebert's name attached to a four stars, you know, fantastic, blah, 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 you know, on that kind of pull quote. And you go, okay. Or if you see, like, the one I remember the most is the Spider-Man 2, like, ads after the movie came out, where they just, like, littered the picture with just nothing but, like, reviews or pull quotes from, like, positive reviews all over the place. And I'm going, okay, so the critics really liked it. I saw it. I thought it was fantastic. Okay, that's cool. They're trying to get more people out to see it. But then there are the ones where they only have like one or two pull quotes, and it's usually, you know, it's like best movie ever or something like that. And then you go and look at who the critic is, and it's somebody from like a local newspaper that nobody's ever heard of, or a local TV channel that, you know, you would not know unless you lived in that area. Yeah. And then the movie winds up being absolute dog shit. So, and it gets, to me, it's worse when they use the fan pull quotes. Now,
because that's what I mean. Like, if they're starting to use fan quotes, mm-hmm. that means the critics didn't have nice things to say.
Now, granted, obviously, general audiences and critics are going to be looking at different things.
Mm-hmm.
Most general audiences are just looking to be entertained, and I'm okay with that. I was not entertained with the first Venom. I am not looking forward to the second one, but it keeps coming up in the news, so we have to keep talking about it, especially because Sony's ad campaign using pull quotes from people that went ahead and watched the movie, these fans and whatnot, they're not focused on the movie as a whole. They are focused on the post-credit scene, which is a far cry from where you want to be with your movie. Usually you have them focus on the main film, and you don't want them to say anything about Easter eggs or post credits, anything like that. So apparently the big one is, you know, I've never heard a theater scream like they did during this post credit scene, blah, 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 blah. And so I'm going, Trisha, I think I know what this means. And I know I'm going to be right. So if you are excited for Venom 2 and you don't want this spoiled for you, go ahead and shut off the podcast now, because we're going to talk about this for probably about 3 to 5 minutes. 3, 2, 1. Okay, everybody gone? All right, so the post-credits scene, and I've read it. Basically, we're finally getting confirmation that Venom and Spider-Man are happening in the same universe, at least to some degree. Now, there's speculation about whether or not this happens at the exact same time as the events of No Way Home or Far From Home, or if it's in a different universe with similar things happening to their version of Peter Parker, things like that. Either way, Sony's been kind of towing this line of, hey, we have Marvel movies over here. They're pretty close to the MCU, and Marvel, you know, Marvel Studios is going, no, stop it. Stop it.
You can't sit with us.
No, like, you're in the room with us, but you need to sit at the kids' table over there. The grown-ups are talking. Well, it looks like the grown-ups have finally may have started to let them in, or something has happened that is going to allow,
or the kid has made a run for the adult table and forced their way into a chair,
which is very possible. So it's looking to me, though, like what is probably happening is that Marvel Studios and Sony have made some kind of deal, which we kind of knew was coming, because this is Tom Holland's last contracted film, which it wasn't even originally contracted yet. It was not going to happen with the MCU. It was just going to go back to Sony and be done with it. Like, there was that whole debacle. We talked about it. Like, so this is what's happening. So now the question becomes, okay, is Marvel continuing their relationship with Sony? And are they starting to have more input into what those Marvel movies look like? Are they just letting Sony kind of do their thing, but using the multiverse to keep it separate, which I could see being the biggest, most likely case here? The question is, we don't know. Or the answer is, we don't know. So I don't know. I look at that and I just go, okay. So I told our friend Abby about this. And
the biggest takeaway from your movie is that it might be connected to the MCU. That's not a good thing.
No. No. And so unless they are bringing Venom into the actual MCU, I still have no interest in the character in the movie at all until they do something, you know, right with it that actually makes for a decent movie and not a hot mess of black gooey garbage. That's where we're at. Like, we watched the trailer for it last night with Cop Shop, and I'm still sitting there going, this just does not look good. I'm hoping I'm wrong. I really do. I really hope I'm wrong. Then that it's actually way better than the trailers are making it out to be. But I'm just not feeling it. But like I said, this kind of points in the direction. There's also been rumors that Marvel might be trying to buy out Sony's Spider-Man characters, which would be great. It would be absolutely great.
But I feel like they've been trying to do that for a very long time. So this is exactly news. Yeah. So, Sony doesn't want to give up one of its few moneymakers.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we're at with it. It's looking likely that it's going to happen. So the next time that we see Spider-Man after No Way Home, which would make that title hit more on the nose than anything else, is that after this, he is for sure done with the MCU, and we will not be seeing him with Doctor Strange or any of the other characters at any point in time after that. So I think that's the most likely scenario. I don't know. Do you have anything you wanted to throw in with that? Or
I have no idea.
Yeah. So, okay. So back to directors, though. And since we're still on this MCU subject, Denis Villeneuve. Every 6 months or so, it seems like we get like an artistic director that wants to shit on the MCU for one thing or the other. Martin Scorsese did it. I feel like there was somebody else that did it. Now it's Denis Villeneuve. And so basically, I don't know what the question was that led up to it, and it was a Spanish language newspaper that that was asking the question. So let's see, hold on. So let's see. His initial comment made in an interview with Spanish language newspaper El Mundo dismisses any unique artistic value of Marvel's big screen offerings. According to Villeneuve, there are too many Marvel movies that are nothing more than a cut and paste of others. It's a notion on which he would elaborate in a subsequent interview with Premiere, where he further opines the problem today. Well, if we're talking about Marvel, the thing is all these films are made from the same mold. Some filmmakers can add a little color to it, but they're all cast in the same factory. It doesn't take anything away from the movies, but they are formatted. You're sitting there looking at me like, really? I see where he's coming from. But if we're being real, Marvel movie, comic book movies in general, they all follow a formula. There's a formula to them. And so
not just comic book movies that do that. Like, that's what drives me nuts. Everyone sits here and badmouths the MCU, but how many generic action flicks do we have that are all the same? How many disaster movies do we have that follow the same formula?
Yeah.
Why is it just the MCU that's getting attacked?
Yeah. It's because they're the big moneymaker right now. That's what it boils down to. So, like I said, I don't necessarily disagree with him, but at the same time, I'm going, that's the history. It's the hero's journey. It is a trope that has been there since the beginning of time. Like,
and it's oversimplified.
Yeah.
Because there's so much commentary in a lot of these on a lot of different things and issues and themes and whatnot.
Yeah.
That just to dismiss them as, oh, they're just formulaic, whatever.
Yeah.
Have you actually sat down and watched them?
Yeah.
Or are you just going off of trailers and what people have talked about and just assuming?
Yeah. So, So I was reading that and I was just going, we do this every 6 months. Like I said, Scorsese does it. Villeneuve does it. I'm sure somebody else is going to do it. I feel like Tarantino has even said something at some point, but I think Tarantino also followed up with, these are the Westerns of today, back in the '50s, or, you know, the '50s and early '60s, Westerns were everywhere. They were the big money makers. That's what you use. And so, and yes, they all have a formula that they follow for the most part. You have a few that might upend things, but like I said, this is nothing new. We've done this for the history of film. We've done it for the history of storytelling. And it's just, like I said, it goes back to that. So, yeah. So I think that I agree with you. I think it is an oversimplification. I do agree with him that there is a cut and paste aspect, because there are, especially in the early MCU, I think there's a lot of movies where I'm like, okay, it's that way. But as you get further along and you get to Black Panther, Shang-Chi, you know, you get to kind of explore Black Widow, even you get to explore these themes of, you know, culture and identity and, you know, oppression and all that.
They've touched a lot on trauma.
Yeah.
Trauma and mental health, especially as it's gotten on. They've done it with, especially the TV shows.
Yeah.
They've really leaned into that. And it's great. People like to make fun of those of us who like Bucky, but it's like, he's been through some shit and he's still trying to be better. What is so wrong with that?
Yeah.
Same with Black Widow. She went through a lot and is still trying to become a better person. So I'm sorry you don't like that.
Yeah. But anyway, but what I wanted to get to here was that, so hold on. So, okay, so somebody actually did find the whole quote for Denis Villeneuve, and the question was, precisely at the moment big films are part of a franchise, and that goes against the very notion of author. Can't find what to do. Dune is making the choice of the franchise and not that of the author. So like I said, that's a rough translation from a Spanish newspaper, so bear with me on that wording because I didn't make it. And so what he said was, no, for me, the very notion of auteur film is overused. As long as you feel a personality in a project, that it is an artistic object and that there is a will at work. It is not a question of money, but how we approach the cinema. The problem today, well, if we're talking about Marvel, the thing is all these films are made from the same mold. And so I kind of get what he's saying there, because there's not a whole lot of different direction from each director. Some people you can kind of pinpoint, like, they're actual like trademarks that they do in film. And I don't get a whole lot of that watching the MCU, sadly. But when you're trying to create a connected universe, you don't necessarily want that. You want them to kind of be cohesive in a way.
So, look at the complaints people have about the Harry Potter series.
Yeah.
Some directors tried to make it their own.
Yeah.
And it just, it doesn't work that way. When you're, if you're doing a series or a connected universe, there needs to be cohesion, which means you do give up a little bit of that artistic license. Right. Because if you put your artistic spin on a movie that's part of a series, it feels disconnected.
Yeah. So that's, like I said, I felt like there was going to be more to that than what was just cut and paste. And I'm like, there's got to be more to it than that. And there usually is. And so what it boils down to is that you do lose that sense of authorship amongst these films. And I don't disagree with that argument. As much as I enjoy these movies, I am well known for saying I enjoy the MCU. I like these Marvel movies. I enjoy watching them. They are fast food cinema. They are not there to change your mind, fulfill your soul. And they're starting to. They're trying to. They're trying to put those themes in, as you said.
But well, I think there's a way for these directors to say, you know, that's just not my thing. I don't care to make those type of movies without bad mouthing the movies themselves, without making it sound like they're bad movies that no one should enjoy, because then you're just pissing people off.
Yeah.
But if you say, hey, I really like to put my own artistic spin on the movies I make, and I can't do that with these, so that's not my thing, that's fine. I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
And this sounds like it was a case of just bad translation, people taking quotes out of context, whatnot, because it sounds like that's what he's trying to get at.
Yeah.
But again, there's ways to express that without just saying they're bad.
Yeah.
If they're all the same.
Well, and if you ask me, this is also a case of, oh, well, we're going to take the most incendiary thing out of this and put it out there as our pull quote.
You mean like the articles I keep seeing saying that the MCU has replaced Tom Holland, and when you get into it, it's really just that Tom Holland couldn't do the voice for What If, so they got a new actor?
Yep, it's clickbait. So it's
clickbait.
So what the lesson here is for you guys is quit getting worked up every time somebody says something bad about the MCU. Go actually read the article instead of just reading the tweet, and move on. And there are some people that read the tweet and read the actual story, and then they still come to the conclusion that, well, he's just shitting all over the MCU, whatever. I can't change your mind.
And also, something that every fan needs to learn in fandom, and a lot of people have, but a lot of people haven't. Just because you like a thing doesn't mean everyone has to like a thing.
Exactly.
Just because you don't like a thing doesn't mean everyone else has to hate that thing.
Yeah.
Let people like what they like, as long as it's not hurting anyone.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's it.
As much as I don't like Venom, if you enjoyed it, I'm happy for it. I'm glad somebody enjoyed it. I did not. It was not for me. And that's coming from somebody who loves comic book movies.
No, no one nerd is going to be into everything.
No.
You pick and choose the things you like. That's fine.
Yeah. So, anyway. But speaking of directors that divide people on a regular basis, this is the last big story that I wanted to talk about this week, because it's kind of huge, and I like the guy. I like his work. You know that. I think, for the most part, I think you enjoy the movies he makes, too, because you also don't know a whole lot about, you don't know much, many directors. You know Edgar Wright, you know, well, Christopher Nolan's the one that we're going to be talking about now. So
I'm like, I don't know where you're getting at.
Yeah.
So, film, the behind the scenes people, I don't know as well. There's Edgar Wright, and I do like Guillermo del Toro.
Yes. Yes.
Christopher Nolan.
Yes. So in this instance, it's
probably more, but their names aren't coming to mind off the top of my head. That's not important. There's only a handful of like director producer types that
you know,
aside from, you know, the Steven Spielbergs of the world that everybody knows.
Yeah.
There's only a handful of ones that like I know by name.
Yeah.
And when I see that name, I'm like, all right, I'm in. I'm going to go watch that.
Exactly. So we have to talk about Christopher Nolan. So basically his relationship with Warner Brothers is over and done. That was an ugly divorce. A lot of it stems from Tenet's release last year, and then going into this year when Warner Brothers and HBO Max announced that they would be doing day and date releases for all of their their films.
He was not happy, to put it lightly.
Basically, and so the Hollywood Reporter put out kind of a, I'd say an oral history, but that's probably not the right term, but basically the story about how the competition to get him to their studio went for three different companies. So anyway, so his next movie is going to be a Robert J. Oppenheimer film, basically about the development of the atomic bomb during World War II. We have no idea what that story is going to entail. We've already seen a Manhattan Project movie before. It's not anything new, so we'll just see what Christopher Nolan brings to it. But he did have stipulations for whoever came by to make an offer to him. Trisha, this is a case of knowing your worth and accepting no less. And I feel like we should all learn this lesson for Chris Nolan.
Peggy Carter would be proud.
Regardless of whether or not you like him as a director, you like his films, any of that, or if you just think he's a pretentious prick, whatever. I know he divides people. A lot of these guys do. But you have to respect the fact that he said, this is what I want, stuck to his guns, and fucking got it. Like, so basically what it boils down to is Universal, Sony, and Apple all came to him wanting to get his services to make his next movie.
In this case, literally came to him.
Literally. Trekked to his Hollywood Hills compound. This place is not just where he lives, but it's where he also edits films, all that. Like, this is some shit. So anyway, but here's what he got. So if you go find the story, I'll share it on our Twitter feed, because I found the whole thing interesting. But basically, these were the demands that he made. He wants total creative control of the film, at least a 100-day theatrical window, with that number varying anywhere from 110 to 130, which would be more of the old school theatrical window. A $100 million budget with an equal marketing spend. And we've always talked about that whenever you make a big budget movie, you have to spend at least that much or almost that much in marketing to do that. And so in order to make your movie profitable, you spend $200 million on a movie, you're going to spend another $2 million. So in order to break even, you got to make 400. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about. That's what this is here. So he's looking at making a $100 million movie with a $100 million marketing campaign. So it's got to make $200 million to do that. He also wants 20% of first dollar gross. So this isn't like they're waiting on the back end after the movie's made money. He wants that first portion. So the studio won't make money until that first 20% comes in and the numbers are done. And then this is the one that threw me off, Trisha, because I've never heard of this. But damn, I got to give him props because he got it. A blackout period where the studio would not release another movie for 3 weeks before or after the feature releases.
Yeah, that's when I texted you and I was like, what?
Yes. So I know a lot of people are sitting there, they read that and they go, well, he's a fucking diva. And I'm going, okay. Or he got what he wanted. He knew what he wanted. He would not accept any less. And that was it.
He's proven that he can make movies that bring in a lot of money.
Yeah.
So he says, you know what? You want me? You're going to give me what I deserve.
Right.
And what I want.
Yeah. So, and I mean, outside of the Dark Knight trilogy, which we all know had made, you know, $1 billion, you know, almost per movie, you know, if you take away that, you still have Inception, you still have Dunkirk, you still have Interstellar, you still have The Prestige, all of which made bank at the box office. The guy knows what he's worth. And so for him to ask for that, it might sound outlandish to most people, but to me, I'm sitting there going, dude knows exactly what he has.
And not all of it is about his benefit necessarily. If you notice, a lot of those things are things that, yeah, sure, they'll benefit him, but there's several in there that will benefit theaters.
Yeah.
He was one of the first ones throughout COVID to speak up in defense of movie theaters and protecting movie theaters.
Yes.
And he's probably been the most vocal of anyone in Hollywood defending theaters and saying, we need to make sure theaters are still around after this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the theatrical window and the release, the blackout date, like all those, sure, it helps him, but it helps theaters too. And so he's like, you know what? I'm going to get what I want and I'm going to get what I deserve. And I'm going to make sure these theaters get some help along the way too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So if you go through this there, so there's more than just the three studios. So one other one was Paramount. Paramount was in the mix early, but they had a shakeup with their executives that saw their previous head, guy by the last name was Giannopoulos. Sorry, I dreamed too or went too far ahead to actually get his name. But the former head of Paramount is being replaced by Brian Robbins, who is more focused on Paramount Plus being successful, because of course he is. And so that ruled them out early. Apple was next and they were ready to commit to a theatrical window, but they weren't about to do the 110 to 130 day space, whatever that number was. They would not commit to that long of a window. So Sony and Universal were the two in the end that wound up competing for it. And Sony wanted it bad enough that they kept pointing to their last movie was with Quentin Tarantino, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, say we let him do what he wanted to do. Here's the thing though, is Tarantino still did it on a smaller budget, but you can still go, we are wanting to let the artist be the artist and make the movie they want. So they were right there in condition. So Universal came in and basically just after he said, here's what I want, they just said, okay, we'll do it. Like, yes, like without hesitation, because they know what they've got. And like, that's the thing. And so, like I said, love him or hate him, you have to admire that the guy is a good technical director. You can say what you want about dialogue.
You don't have to like his movies to show that he knows what he's doing.
He
makes movies that people love, mm-hmm. and they talk about and get good word of mouth and that make money, and ultimately that's what a studio cares about. So they're going to give him whatever he wants to get him to work with them.
So and not only that, is capable of making original content that doesn't necessarily need a sequel, stands on its own, and is at the very least, as you said, has you talking about it for a while. Mm-hmm. Love or hate Tenet, we were all talking about it for a bit. Inception, we are still talking about that movie to this day. That's why we named it our movie of the decade for the 2010s. Like,
I mean, who hasn't used the term Inception? Like, whateverception. Like, that's just become a norm in our language.
Yeah.
You know, so it's made an impact. Whether or not you like the movie, it worked its way into not just pop culture history, but our vernacular, everyday vernacular.
Yeah. And then
you have to recognize that.
Yeah. And then throw on top of that the Dark Knight trilogy, which is not original IP, but honestly,
he made it his own.
He did make it his own. And if you took away the Batman dressing to it, would have been an outstanding series of crime thrillers, like especially Dark Knight. Like,
it's almost become the standard for Batman going forward.
Yeah, like we're not gonna get, you know, the goofy 60s campy Batman anymore, which we haven't had that, well, since Batman and Robin, but that's not what Tim Burton was going for initially. You know, this was much more gritty, and it looks like Robert Pattinson's the Batman is going to take some of that inspiration and go even darker and even grittier with it. And I'm going, that's a legacy that you can hang your hat on. But like I said, when we talk about sci-fi movies, you know, Inception and Interstellar both come up. War movies. One of the best war movies of the last decade was Dunkirk, and it's only 90 minutes. And you don't get to know any of the characters. You don't really get to know anything about them, but you are along for the ride with them, experiencing this war at the exact same time that they are. And the storytelling is done in a way that keeps your interest the entire time and doesn't let up. The guy knows what the hell he's doing. Like I said, you can bitch about whatever other aspects of his filmmaking that you don't like, be it his writing, be it, you know,
his movies are too confusing.
Yeah.
Sorry, you have to actually pay attention while you want.
You can be mad about the sound mixing. That's my one big complaint with him. But even then, I, you know, it does drop me into that experience. So I just don't get too worked up about it. Like I said, there's a lot of things you can complain about. Well, the one thing you can't complain about, I don't think, is that the guy knows how to make a movie that keeps you talking.
Yeah.
Keeps you talking well after it's over and gone. And that's what Universal is getting. So, like I said, you can call him a diva, you can call him whatever you want, but dude's doing what we all should be doing, which is going to the bosses and saying, fuck you, pay me. And he's getting paid. So, yeah.
Respect.
And, yeah. So, like I said, nothing but respect over here. Like, that's straight up king shit. So, and like I said, you can think it's diva move all you want. I'm like, I think he's earned it. So until he drops just straight goose eggs, like three in a row, like then I would go, okay, now you need to chill out and take a cut. Like,
yeah,
you know, you need to go back to something smaller budget and all that. But until then, he's earned it. So,
yep.
Like I said, it was just one of those things I was reading, and I was just amazed at how one man in Hollywood gets everybody so worked up, and that's what we're getting. So like I said, I'm looking, I didn't even have a Robert J. Oppenheimer film on my radar, but like Christopher Nolan's attached, it's a biopic, it's going to be something different than what he's done in the past. Okay, I'm in. Just like I was in for a spy thriller set with time travel. I was in for, you know, a heist movie set in your dreams. I was along for the ride with, you know, a brooding, angsty billionaire wearing bat ears. Like, The guy just knows how to make a movie that keeps you entertained, or at the very least keeps you talking.
It's true.
So, and that kind of leads back to my Denis Villeneuve point and people shitting on the MCU. Every time that you sit there and you look at what they say or what they're doing and you try to shit all over it, congratulations, you've played yourself, because you're doing the exact same thing that you didn't want to do, which was be talking about it. Kind of like we talked about that movie last week. You know, you're mad about him for whatever, but you're still talking about him. And as they say, the bad press, you know, there's no such thing as bad press. So, like, you're still got his name in your mouth. So, anyway, just something that I found fascinating. And like I said, I had to share it with you. So once I found that out, so, but still, 110 to 130 day theatrical window. Like,
that's, I don't know. Old school shit right there.
It is old school shit. Like, and I don't, like, that doesn't throw me off near as much as the, I want a 3-week window before and after the release where you don't release anything else. To which I'm going, what about Despicable Me? What about their kids' movies? Like, are we banning them? Like, do they get to kind of sneak in there? Or is this just a straight up, no, this is my
convince a major studio to release one movie in a 6-week period, yeah. 7-week period, three yeah. weeks before, 3 weeks after, to just... the balls,
yeah,
and the fact that he got it is just
right. That for me, I think, is the biggest thing. I was like, you went in and just said, you just whipped your dick out, flopped it on the table, said, here you go,
I'm the only movie you're gonna release for the entire summer.
And Universal just straight up said, okay, pretty much, like, let's do it. So, and it's a fucking biopic. It's not even an action thriller. It's not a superhero movie. It's none of those. It's a fucking biopic, and he got it. That's where I'm just dying laughing. And like I said, you can be pissed off about it all you want, but you can't deny that dude just said, okay, this is what I want, nothing less. And somebody said, okay. Like, we don't know if there was any negotiation after that, or if there's still any ongoing negotiation with the Universal. Yeah. I am sure more details will come out with time, but like, that's what he said. And Universal apparently just said, yes.
Okay, done.
Let's do it. Like, that, you can't argue with investing in your talent. Like,
no.
you have to.
Yeah.
And I think that's where Warner Brothers is going to find that issue with the day and date streaming thing. Like, it all ties back to that, doesn't it? Isn't that just fun how we just keep going back to this? It all ties back to, we have to keep it in theaters.
That's how they make money. It's the only way to make money.
Yeah. So
making money means bigger budget for future projects.
Exactly.
Which means better, probably, not always, better quality movie.
Right. So
that's how the cycle goes.
At least you're going to get a better spectacle on film, like, you know. So even the worst movies, Day After Tomorrow or any of those Roland Emmerich movies, we watched Cop Shop last night, and so the trailer for Moonfall was attached to it. No idea what this movie is other than Roland Emmerich going, yeah, you liked when I blew up cities with spaceships. You liked when we froze the planet. You liked when we fucking drowned it in 2012. Fuck it. Let's drop the moon on Earth and just see what happens. I'm in. Like, but yeah, that's where we're going with that, is that it's all leading back to that. And so, you know, like I said, be mad about all you want. It's not going to change anything. It just, I find the whole thing absolutely fascinating. So,
yeah.
King shit. That's what that is. King shit. So, anyway, real quick, we're out of time, but I did want to say we watched Cop Shop last night. Like I said, we just mentioned that. Surprisingly decent action thriller. It's kind of tropey. It's kind of takes its cues from like old 70s pulp action movies. But we were surprised by how much we really enjoyed it.
To be fair, going into it, we're like, look, it's a Gerard Butler movie. He doesn't always make good movies, but he makes entertaining movies.
Exactly.
And that was pretty much the bar it had to hit, and it cleared it. It was entertaining.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yep. I enjoyed it. It was just one of those movies where it's like, okay, so we're gonna kill about 2 hours and just see shit get shot up and blown up. And it's all set in a police station, which I thought was kind of a cool idea. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's not been done before, it's been done before, but I was like, you know what, let's try it out and just see what happens. And like, it's directed by Joe Carnahan, who did Smoke and Aces and the A-Team movie and The Gray and a bunch of other like smaller budget, but highly entertaining action movies. And usually winds up bringing in some kind of weird ass character. Toby Huss is in this movie. I forgot who Toby Huss was until I Googled it mid-movie. Toby Huss played Artie, the strongest man in the world, on The Adventures of Pete and Pete. Which, by the way, he was like 27 when he did that show, and now he's 54. And I'm sitting there going, Jesus, you look like shit in your 20s. Like, because watching that show, did you not think that was a man in like his mid-30s, early 40s?
It's been so long since I've seen Pete and Pete that I couldn't tell you.
Go back and look him up as Artie and see what you think. Because I'm sitting there going, man, like, you've aged much better now. But yeah, he plays a hitman. And that's all I really want to say, because he steals the whole fucking movie. Like, we were cracking up the entire time with him, and we shouldn't have been. And it was great. Like, he delivers this blast of a performance. So highly recommend. If you're looking for something to go see, don't forget. So you've got Cry Macho is out this weekend. We didn't even get to talk about Malignant. We didn't watch the movie yet, but its box office stank. And so not really much to talk about, but apparently the twist at the end is getting everybody going crazy. Maybe we will get somebody on here to talk about that movie with us after we see it. Ideas. So anyway, that's going to do it for us this week. Make sure you go to mydrunkmovietheater.store. That's where you can get all of our merchandise, t-shirts and all that. We've actually got ours. They ship today, Trisha. So they're on the way. They should be here before I go to New York so I can advertise while I'm up there. Go there. Make sure you follow us at drunk_theater on Twitter. We interact with everybody on there. That's the best place to catch us at. If you have questions, comments, jokes that you just want to show us into us, any kind of commentary, we'll always appreciate it. Dogs are coming down. That's how I know it's time to end the show. That's pretty much it. So, Trisha, I know you don't have anything else to add, so we'll just close it out. And for all of us here at My Drunk Movie Theater, I'm Kyle Sutton.
I'm Trisha Campbell.
And be nice to your damn movie staff.